This is the hashtag STR Ask podcast from Stand to Reason. Welcome, everyone. We're so glad you're here to listen, and we're glad that you send in your questions on Twitter with the hashtag STR Ask. I was just saying to someone, Greg, he said it made him feel special to have us answer his question. And he said, I guess that's why you do this. But I said, no, we really do need your questions. We really are dependent on your questions. You really are part of the show. Right. This isn't some trick to make you feel special. You really are special. You are contributing to the show, and we could not do it without mm-hmm. you. So we would love to hear from more of you. Send those on Twitter with the hashtag STRAsk. All right. Let's go to a question from Jim. What is the difference between immersing yourself in the Bible and in the process becoming more firmly convinced that Christianity is true and confirmation bias?
Well, it's interesting that, I was going to say he described two different things here, but it may not be any different. All right. It just kind of depends on what's going on when you immerse yourself in the Bible. All right. Confirmation bias is when you have a bias to look at only the parts of an issue that confirm your view, and you're not willing to look at the entire set of issues. So if what you're doing is studying the Bible and learning more about it, and that strengthens you in your convictions about it, I guess you might call that a confirmation bias. But not all. The reason I'm pausing is the phrase confirmation bias is a pejorative. That means you have a bias that you confirm, and the ideas that you're biased to are false. Okay? But anyone who has ideas about anything, if they study more about that, they are going to probably confirm those ideas, all right? And the more information that you have, the broader your understanding, the deeper your knowledge, the more you are affirmed in those things. And some might call it a bias in that you have a point of view. But that doesn't mean your point of view is false, and it doesn't mean that you hold your point of view for the wrong reasons, for merely the reasons of psychological manipulation. I won't look at the things that disagree. I'm only looking at things that agree. I think that's called special pleading or something like that. Well, this is why we're willing to answer the questions. We are willing to address the challenges. Even in a prior show, Amy, I raised an issue in answer to things. I said, now here's a problem with that. Someone might say this, that, and the other thing, and then I tried to answer that objection. So if we are in the process of not just of being thoughtful about and reflective about the things we think we know and honest about the challenges and trying to address the challenges, I think it protects us from confirmation bias. We may be looking for confirmation because we do have a stake in the matter, a bias, but that doesn't mean we're distorting the information. Now, I'm not sure if this came as a challenge to the person. Now, the outsider saying, oh, you're reading your Bible all the time. That's just confirmation bias. Well, you can call it what you want. It might be just studying to know. And especially if you are sensitive to the apologetics issue and you are trying to develop and exercise intellectual virtues, and here you might attend to the Ambassador's Creed, which is on our website, and it's also in the last page or so of the tactics book. If you're pursuing that, then it's unlikely that your bias is going to be a distorting bias. Keep in mind there are two types of biases. There's a bias which is a point of view, all right? And then there's a bias that is a distorting bias, okay? That's generally where confirmation bias comes in. Because you believe in something so strongly, you're only going to consider that evidence that supports your view. Incidentally, that doesn't mean that the view, even if you have confirmation bias, like to the moon, it doesn't mean that your view is false. It could very well be true. and you're looking at all the reasons why it is true. But what you're not doing is considering some of the reasons against it and dealing with them. Mm-hmm. But that's what we do. Stand to reason. And that's a healthy thing. And because the truth can stand, withstand criticism and or critique, I should say, and analysis, if in fact it is true.
If, Jim, you are concerned that immersing yourself in the Bible is not what you should be doing, I would just ask, is that what we do with things we think are true? You know, we don't avoid the things we think are true in an effort to avoid confirmation bias. We learn more about them. So if you think the Bible is true, if you've been convinced the Bible is true and you're immersing yourself in it, that is what we do with truth. We want more of truth. So I don't think that's a bad thing. Now, ask yourself, why is immersing yourself in the Bible convincing you that Christianity is true? Well, it could be because you're seeing what the insights it has into humanity, into our condition, into reality, into other truths that we see. If what you are reading there is convincing you that it's true, and it's not simply that you're just hiding from everything else, that's completely legitimate, I would say. Sometimes if you just look at these things in terms of other books or other ideas, you can see that there's no problem with immersing yourself in an idea, finding there things that seem to be true, and becoming more convinced of that truth. There's nothing illegitimate about that.
The only qualifier, caveat I'd offer is that, and this is the problem with confirmation bias, it is just a willingness to listen to things that affirm what you already believe. And so this is why peer review is so important. What does an outsider say about the point of view that you have? What does somebody who's inclined to disbelieve, not believe what you say, what do they say why you shouldn't believe it? And so this is why you want to hear what are the arguments against the view that I think is true. And if you're willing to countenance those and address them, this is what protects you from a kind of vicious confirmation bias, a distorting confirmation bias. And this is something that we do on a regular basis here at Stand to Reason. Mm-hmm. We can't avoid it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And 'cause people are raising the issues all the time.
Let's go on to a question from Gordy Hammerly. How would you respond to this statement? Our personal deity is nothing more than the amplification of our own core ethics. Why? Because that is the lens we choose to see God. God is the echo chamber of our own bias, all of us.
I did a course yesterday at Biola for their graduate program, and I said to them that there is an overriding reason, at least broadly in principle, that I think that I'm a Christian. And that's because I think that it's true. And when I say it's true, I mean that it fits the world the way it really is. All right? And my reasons for believing in Christianity are tied to features of the world and are not tied to anything about me. All right? If my reasons for believing Christianity are tied to me, then my psychological state and my upbringing and my social environment and all kinds of other things can come into play to be questioned as influences why I would believe something, why I do believe. Okay, and I would be vulnerable to those kinds of challenges. But if my confidence in the truth of Christianity and God's existence is tied to things that are outside of my sociology, outside of my culture, outside of my emotions, outside of anything pertaining to me, then those facts stand or fall on their merits unrelated to anything with me. Now, notice this objection that that was raised had to do with my psychological condition. You believe because of this psychological condition. Now, I don't know if the person thinks that this is why all people believe things. It's their psychological conditions that motivate that. But if he does, then he's in a self-defeating circumstance. And C.S. Lewis points this out. And he does so in the Mere Christianity. And if you say, he says, if you say, look at these things are all a matter of the psychology and that you believe these things, as per that comment there that you just read, then Lewis would say, well, what about your criticism of me and the views that you have? Aren't that all part of your psychology and aren't rooted in a legitimate complaint? And he said, well, no, my psychology doesn't necessarily delegitimize my complaints against you, Christian. And then Lewis says, well, then my psychology doesn't delegitimize my views as a Christian. So, you know, if on the one hand, he saws off the branch that we are both sitting on, but if he acts to save his branch, then he saved our branch as well. Okay? So if all of our views are psychological projections about something, then even the view that our views are psychological projections doesn't escape that criticism, that it's merely a psychological projection. Can there be psychological projections? Sure. How do you avoid that? How do you deal with that potential problem? You look at the reasons why you think your view is correct, and these are reasons outside of you. So I could give the cosmological argument. The Kalam cosmological argument. There's a number of them, but that's just one of them, you know. Say, here, I believe that there's a God because he's the best explanation for the origin of the universe, and we all know the universe came into being. Either something or nothing caused it. What makes more sense? The odds on favorite is something caused the universe, not nothing caused the universe to come into being. Okay, so there's a reason. What does that have to do about my preconceived notions or my biases or anything? That stands or falls on its merits. It has nothing to do with me. It's totally outside of me. This is why grounding your convictions in truth outside of you saves you from having to not only deal with these kinds of objections, but to wonder whether these are the kinds of issues that are actually interfering with your belief system. In other words, interfering in a way that make you believe something false about God. If my evidences or my reasons are outside of me, they stand on their own merits. And that's really the key to this question. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? I'm not sure if I explained it clearly.
It does, but I would also add this. How could Christianity be an amplification of our own core ethics? How could it have ever gotten off the ground? Christianity has changed so much of society. Just look at the way it revolutionized sexual ethics. There are so many things that are different now. Why would anybody want to do that, right?
If you're thinking from a human side of things.
Well, right. But also, if it wasn't their ideas beforehand, then how could it have gotten off the ground? Mm-hmm. If Christianity is only a reflection of our core ethics, then how could it have ever changed the ethics of a society?
Right.
How could it have changed everything? Tom Holland, who's not even a Christian, wrote a book called Dominion that talks about how Christianity completely revolutionized Western society and brought about ideas such as, you know, being a servant or a crucified God, how that changed everything about the way we viewed society. That was a way that this changed. I can't remember if I said the book. The book is called Dominion. Mm-hmm. But how could the ethics of Christianity have changed society if it came out of the ethics of society? It's impossible.
This reminds me of something I wrote a long time ago. It might have showed up in a mentoring letter. God is just an idea. I think the title of it was something to, but it's along this line. And my point was kin to what you're saying, Amy, and that is, who would invent this? the first, last, no sex outside of marriage. You can't even think about it. you know, he who, you know, put your hand to the plow, put, take on your cross. Really? This is like the Eastern religion. I can get it, you know. You know, everybody's God, you know, law and personal responsibility, high end individual liberty. You can feel good about this. They're great, you know, spiritual but not religious. So there's no downside, plenty of upside. Very little demand on me. But Jesus and God and the Bible, please. I mean, this isn't a God you make up. You don't make up gods like the biblical God. You don't make a Trinitarian God, for one. You don't make a God who's so hard on everything, who demands perfection. You are to be perfect as my Heavenly Father is perfect. That's the Sermon on the Mount. Really? Whoa. You know, it's like a, this is, who would make that up? This is not self-serving in the slightest. Now, of course, the solution is the grace of God, because nobody can keep the law of God. But the law of God is demanding on us, which requires, which then it shows that our refuge is in the grace of God. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we make this up doesn't make sense when you look at the details. I'll tell you what's made up is the world's view. Me, myself, and I. It's all about them and doing what they want. That's their God in their image. And it's interesting in Psalms. Can't remember which psalm it is, but God looks at the behavior of humans and he says this, "You thought I was just like you, but I am not, and I'm going to hold you account essentially for what you do."
Mm-hmm. That's a great point, Greg. I would also say, when God introduced himself to Abraham, the religions around Abraham were not concerned about morality. They were concerned about how you manipulate the gods in order to get the certain things that you want. Sometimes I think people in Western societies are so used to the idea that morality is an integral part of religion that they're not aware that that's actually not across the board.
Right.
I mentioned the book last time, The Bible Among the Myths, and it goes into this idea and explains how the beginning of God revealing himself to Abraham was a radical change from previous religions. They were about cult practices, about doing the right rituals, and kind of participating with the gods in order to make sure that they got the right outcomes.
Yeah, Baal was the storm god. You know, an Ashtoreth was a sexual god related to fertility of the land, and this is why they did sympathetic magic with in the high places, which amounted to sex in order to get good crops. Just exactly what you're saying.
And they were tribal. Now, one thing that happened when God created the nation of Israel, he said, "Look, I am removing these people because they have done these horrible things. But guess what? If you do those horrible things, you will also be rejected by me." It was about morality, but that was a new thing. That wasn't something that everybody was used to. So this idea that we just create gods to match our morality, that doesn't seem to be the case if you look at history and you look at what religions have been and how they have developed and how Christianity has changed the world. We get so caught up in our own view that we just have no, I think just people just don't know what they're talking about most of the time when they bring up these objections. They're just not familiar.
This is I talk about this in the book Tactics on the concept of reversing the burden of proof, because people can regularly and do regularly come up with alternate explanations. Oh, I can explain that. And what they do is they just give a characterization that's different than ours. And they think that an alternate explanation is a refutation of our view, when it's not. All it is another player in the game. Now they got to go further and say why their explanation is more sound, more reliable, more accurate to the nature of the thing than ours is. That's another step, and that's why we ask the question, okay, now what are your reasons for that? How'd you come to that conclusion? Help me out here. Why should I believe that is the way it took place. Now, we've just been talking about why you shouldn't believe that's the way it took place, because we don't think that's the way it took place. But this is partly their job, and we call them to account for their own ideas. They can't just give an alternate explanation and act as if their job is done. What they do is they can give an alternate explanation and then give the reasons why they think this explanation is better than our explanation.
Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Jim and Gordy, for your questions. Thank you, everyone, for sending in your questions. You can send those on Twitter with the hashtag STRask. You can go through our website, just choose I have another question on the contact page, put hashtag STRask somewhere in your question, keep it under 280 characters, and we will consider that. We really appreciate hearing from you. And thanks for listening. This is Amy Hall and Greg Kokel for Stand to Reason.